Have you ever wondered why there are talking donkeys in the Bible? Well, that is what we're discussing on this week's episode of My Strange Bible. Alex, good to see you, my friend. It's been a few weeks.
Yeah, always good to see you, Steve. And we've actually been able to catch up on lunch a couple times in the most recent future. So that's been a good break from the norm, I must say.
Totally. Totally. Yeah, I'll always enjoy that. It's been a little bit hectic in both your life and mine. So we've taken the past couple weeks off a little bit without notice, but we are back in action. We've got a new recording schedule. We've got four episodes I'm looking at on this list to record. Lots of great content lined up. And I'm just pumped to be back at it, my friend.
I'm excited. And what a great episode to come back with, just talking about talking donkeys. I mean, who hasn't seen one of those every couple of years? But it's still, you know, worth talking about.
Right. I mean, absolutely. So this is going to be one of those interesting ones. This is one, Alex, that you and I were kind of talking about. And it's interesting because it's one of those stories that you kind of forget, like how weird it is. And like, especially if you've never read it, specifically thinking about it being a weird story. Like again, this is one of those stories that, at least for me, I'm speaking for myself, when I would come across it in my normal Bible reading, I would kind of be like, oh yeah, this is the thing with the talking donkey. And so I would just like zoom past it, right? Like pretty fast.
Yeah.
Oh, I know this story. And so now that I'm more in tune with how the Bible works and I'm thinking about it, I'm slowing down and I'm reading the story and I'm going, what the heck is going on? I'm so confused. So.
Yeah, it's one of those things where we kind of fit it into that, like almost like a kid Bible story. We think about the talking donkey and then we automatically kind of assign it to like this cartoonish story that's just silly. And then we forget about it. But you're right. This story spans multiple chapters. We're going to be focusing on this chapter, but it's a pretty big story. And I think it's a really cool one that has a lot of teachable lessons in it. Of course, we're focusing on the strange part, but definitely, we're still, I think, providing some background to the characters and where we're at in this situation.
Oh, yeah. And there's lots of, again, there's a practical study here that could exhaust far more than what we're going to talk about today.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
So, all right. So let's set the scene a little bit. All right. So in this story, we are in the book of Numbers, starting about chapter 22. And then actually the story spans multiple chapters. Which is another thing that I really didn't realize when I went back to read it again. I was like, man, this story is actually quite a bit longer than I thought. But really, chapter 22, if I'm not mistaken, has sort of most of the meat of the pieces that we're going to talk about today. So here's the basic sketch. The Israelites are in their wilderness wanderings. And here's a funny tidbit that I actually did not know until today when I was studying this. The Hebrew word for that we call Numbers, for the book of Numbers, I forget exactly how to say the word, but it actually has the meaning in the wilderness. So it's kind of one of those weird things. Yeah, me neither. Right? One of those funny things. It's like, one of the whole reasons that we skip the book of Numbers in our thinking, or we just like automatically think, oh, that's a boring book, is because like at the beginning of the book and at the end of the book, you know, there's basically a census, right? Israel is counted. And so it's the book of Numbers. But really the meaning of the book is in the wilderness. And it's like, it really talks about all their wilderness wanderings and everything. And so really fascinating. And so near the end, they are, again, working their way, wandering around the wilderness, and they're going through Moab. And the Moabite king, Balak, he is really not liking what he's seeing. He's heard the stories of this mighty people, Israel. They're an overwhelming people, very large numbers of them. And they have come out of Egypt, and there's word is starting to spread in the Transjordan area there, like who these people are. And so he doesn't want to fight them, basically, right?
Right. That's what it comes down to.
Right. That's what it comes down to. He doesn't want to get in a fight with these guys. So, you know, he's a smart guy and he's thinking, well, how can we thwart this great people from becoming a problem for us? And just a reminder that, you know, in our world, the problem that we tend to have is we think in terms of, well, does God or something like God exist or not? That wasn't the problem in the ancient world. In the ancient world, it was well known there were multiple gods of different flavors. We talked about that on other episodes. And so it wasn't which God exists. It was which God or gods do you serve? And and who, you know, can you manipulate any of them to sort of do your bidding, etc. So Balak gets a hold of the local diviner in town, right? The prophetic seer, the guy who is known for his skill in divination. Okay, so this guy is known for contacting supernatural entities and getting them to do what he wants them to do. Kind of creepy, right? This is a weird guy.
Apparently a master in curses, so.
Yes, a master in curses. So they call the guy up, and they're like, hey, his name is Balaam. We tend to call him Balaam, but Balaam is probably more accurate. Anyway, so they call Balaam, and they're like, all right, look, Balaam, we've got these people coming through, and we want to see if you can place a curse on these people and take care of them for us, because we don't want to fight them because their numbers are great and mighty. And so that sort of begins the story, and I'll stop talking there for just a moment, but let me just say that one of the puzzling things as I began to read this is, like, if you look at Balaam the character, I know for me, my presupposition going into studying in advance of this podcast episode was, Balaam, he's kind of a bad guy. And that's about where it ended, right? He's kind of a bad guy. And then you start reading the story, and this actually varies a little bit depending on which version you read. But I was reading the CSB, and frankly, in the CSB, when you're just reading the text, it kind of sounds like he's a good guy, right? It's kind of like, this guy seems to obey, you know, God at every turn. He seems to do what God asks him to do. He seems to even, the way that he talks, it sounds like he actually serves God. Like, again, it's using the word Lord in the small caps or whatever, L-O-R-D. And so that's all, when you see that written in your Bible, if you don't know, that's the word Yahweh. It's the personal covenant name for God. And so, yeah, you see this terminology used and you're thinking, well, is this actually a guy who serves the Lord, even though he's not a Hebrew, which is possible, right? Melchizedek and Job, these are two earlier biblical examples of people who are not Israelites, and yet they are followers of Yahweh. Naaman eventually becomes one of those as well later on. And so there are others. Rahab, she's another one. So, yeah. As I was researching and learning more about this, of course, the New Testament kind of refers to Balaam as like a false prophet. And there's even like groups all down through history, and even some today, from what I understand, that are like, you know, they claim to be like followers of Balaam, right? And so, like, he's actually this historical bad guy. But when you just read the first little bit of the story about him, it actually kind of seems like he's a good guy. Not sure if you got that impression at all or what, but I'll leave it there and we'll continue.
No, I'm glad that you brought that up, because I thought the same exact thing. And it kind of throws his character under the bus here at the beginning, where it says he's kind of, you know, a local divinator, and, you know, they're going to him to seek for him to get a curse on Israel. Just on that background, it seems like a guy who's kind of familiar with setting curses. He's obviously known in that area for dabbling in that stuff. From what I gathered from it, and again, I didn't do a full character overview of him, but it almost seems like that he's one of these guys rarely where he's almost truly open-minded, if you will. I think that when it came down to him seeking what the right option was and God spoke to him, he thought, oh, okay, well, God's actually speaking to me. This is probably the right option. And again, maybe that's super simplified, but I got the same impression as you did. I was very surprised to kind of see that he seemed like someone who was just trying to do maybe the best or the right thing. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but that's kind of what I gathered from the story. at least in part. I know that we'll probably touch on some things as we get through this.
Yeah. Well, and it's one of those things, too, that becomes a little more clear as you start to think through it, right? So, okay, so this is a guy. So let's just take the fact, the bald fact that he is, like, this diviner, right? He's used to divination, right? This is what he does. He's known for divination and for, like, you know, being able to contact evil entities or entities of any kind and have them, like, produce curses and stuff. And so let's just start there. Okay, well, if he's a diviner, in Israelite law anyway, using divination is prohibited. You're not allowed to do that, right? So number one, that carries the assumption that divination is possible, right? Which there's a lot of people today who are like, you know, anti-supernaturalists who want to say, well, you can't do that. There's even some Christians who are like that. Well, no, you can't. Ouija boards and all that stuff. Yeah, you don't want to mess with that stuff, but it's fake anyway. And I'm like, but well, it's fake anyway, Frank. Isn't that weird? But it's like, no, like, there's real spiritual evil that you can get involved with, and that's not good. You absolutely can have contact with evil entities if you so desire it, I believe. And that's exactly what Balaam was demonstrating. And so one thing you'll see, one deduction from him being a diviner, is that probably he's not like a follower of Yahweh because he does all this divination, and likely... he wasn't doing that because it's not allowed. Now, let me actually put a side note to that. Since he was not an Israelite, he did not have the law. And so one interesting deduction that I think you could make from this is that, well, actually, since he was a diviner, he was used to contacting entities of whatever kind. I suppose you could say that he was quite in tune with what we would call the divine council worldview. And so maybe actually he had some context for believing that Yahweh was the high God, the Lord of the council, the creator God. And so he had sort of, we don't see this in the text directly. It would just be an inference, but perhaps he had actually a respect for Yahweh because he knew that Yahweh was the top dog, having had contact with all these other entities. Thoughts on that? It's kind of interesting, huh?
My main thought is it's too bad that on so many characters in the Bible, and especially Balaam, is too bad we couldn't just have like their own book dedicated to them, you know, just an actual, you know, 100-page book or whatever, just saying, hey, here's what happened to this guy in his life. So we know, oh, okay, that makes sense now. Yeah. But we have these few chapters, you know, it's too bad we couldn't know for sure. But I think all that stuff you brought up could very potentially be true for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And there's arguments you can make against it. For example, you know, eventually Balaam would not directly curse them, but he would essentially cause them to be cursed, which that's for another podcast. So, but you know, it's like, so maybe there's things like that suggest that that's not the case. The other thing that I was going to say that I think we can infer just from his being a diviner, if nothing else, is that if he's used to contacting these entities, probably no matter who it is, he's going to want to be on their good side, right? So when we look at them and when we look at him and we say, oh, well, it looks like he was sort of obedient to the Lord. Well, you know, Chemosh is the one that they would burn, you know, the Moabites, actually, it was the Moabite God. And so no doubt he had some kind of contact with whatever the entity is behind what we call, you know, Chemosh. And, you know, Chemosh was the God on which they would literally make the children pass over the fire, and they would burn the kids alive as a sacrifice to Chemosh. And so you got to imagine whenever Balaam is contacting, you know, that entity for whatever purposes, you know, you got to imagine he's probably trying to stay on his good side too. So he probably looks like just as much a follower of Chemosh as he does.
That's true.
Yahweh, right? And so he seems actually a little slippery in that way, right? So that's kind of interesting. Okay, that may be a good segue to the next part of the story, because the next part of the story is where I was initially confused. Remember, I'm starting to read this and I'm starting to see their story and I'm starting to think, okay, well, on my first glance here, it really seems like this guy is a follower of Yahweh. He seems to be. He's doing good work. Well, then you kind of get into this weird sequence, and it's kind of like Job. Remember in Job where, like, you know, this servant comes in and says, there's been disaster. And then the next one runs in and says, there's been a disaster. We kind of have this.
But,
go ahead.
Before you say this part, yeah. I just want to say that I think this part you're getting to is even weirder than the talking donkey, I might say.
Yeah, we're not even kinda, to the talking donkey
in my mind, yes.
This is really weird. Yeah. All right. So we kind of have this beat by beat set of events where Balak sends his messengers to Balaam, and they, you know, to get him to come essentially place a curse on these people, right? So Balak sends messengers and is basically like, I'm going to pay you, right? I'm going to make good on this. I'm going to pay you real good. All I need you to do is just come and put a curse on this people that's going to get ready to come invade my land, right? The Israelites. And so so the messengers go to Balaam, and he's like, well, here's the deal. I got to go talk to their God about this. Even that is divine counsel. It's written all over it, right? Yeah. Isn't it written all over it? It's
100%.
Yeah, it's like, well, we got to go talk to the Israelite God about this.
Yeah. It shows that he believes in the Israelite God in the sense, like, okay, he knows this God exists. You just got to talk to him.
Exactly.
I mean, it's, plain as day there.
Isn't that funny? So, okay. So he's like, yeah, cool. Hey, you guys came all this way. How about you spend the night? It'll be fine. Just take a load off. I'm going to go talk to Israel's God. I'll get back to you, right? And so he talks to God. He's like, hey, I want to curse these people. And God's like, well, here's the problem with that. They're actually blessed. And so you can't curse them.
No.
And so he's like, well, okay, cool. It's, you know, sounds fine to me, God. No worries. Yeah, so they wake up the next morning, right? He talks to the guys and he's like, sorry, guys, no can do. I talk to their God. And he's like, nope, can't do it. They're blessed and this, that, and the other. And they're going to be fruitful and blah, blah, blah. And they're like, whatever. So they go back to their king. And Balak, and they tell him the news. And he's like, oh my goodness. Well, no, we have to press this issue further. We've got a real problem here on our hands. So they send more recognized officials, right? So they send more important people, and they send more money, right? More goods.
Yes.
To this guy, again, to Balaam. And they're like, hey, Balaam, look, I hope, like, if you didn't take us serious the first time, but we're really serious now. We got all this money, and I'm going to... And Balak's like, I'm going to give you everything you could want. It's going to be fantastic. All I need you to do is come curse these Israelites. And so the second wave, he's like, well, tell you what, no problem. Let me go talk to their God again. We'll see if he has a little something to say this time. You know, it's like, now that you're going to offer me more money, let's see if he changes his mind. And so he's like, take a load off. Y'all rest and we'll talk about it again in the morning. So once again, he goes and talks to Yahweh, and Yahweh's like, it ain't gonna happen. You're not gonna curse these people, and you're gonna bless these people. He literally prophesies a blessing, and then Balaam wakes up the next morning, talks to the officials again, and he's like, this time it's different, right? So this is where Yahweh says to him, all right, look, they've come all this way, go, it's fine, but you're only gonna say what I tell you to say, okay? So they wake up the next morning, and he's like, all right, yeah, I'll go, but I can only say what Yahweh tells me to say, and it doesn't matter how much you offer me, the good of your land or whatever, like, ultimately, I have to only do what Yahweh says. I can't say anything else. And they're like, okay, fine. So they all go. Well, then the weirdest thing happens. So Balaam's riding on his donkey. And the next verse that we get, I forget exactly which verse it is, but it says right after it says that they hauled off and went, after God gave him permission to go, the next words are like, God was mad.
Yeah, that, it says, when he got up in the morning, Balaam saddled his donkey and went with the officials of Moab. But God was incensed or angered at Balaam was going.
Yeah.
Next verse.
Yes. He was incensed. He was hot. He was mad. That's what the word means. And so it's like, when I read that, man, I started scratching my head. I thought, wait a minute.
Me too.
Because when I
thought I missed something. I went back and read it like three different times. Like, okay,
I did too. And those are my favorite moments, because that's when I'm like,
yeah,
oh, there's something here. Yeah. Right. There's something here, because you don't typically see, you know, God contradicting himself one verse later. That seems odd.
Yeah.
Real odd. So, you know, I'm looking at this and I'm reading different commentaries and I'm studying like different pastors and I'm looking at this. And there are some people who seem to think that, which I don't understand this interpretation because, boy, when I read the text, it's not there. But there are some people who seem to think that he jumped the gun. Like, he picked up and took off and left before, you know, before they woke up or whatever and, like, were ready to go with him. I don't see that in the text. What I see in the text is, at night, God says, go. They wake up in the morning, they go. And then that morning, God's mad that they went. And that's weird. Mm-hmm. The only thing...
The one thing that I read, and maybe this is your thing, but the one thing that I read, and again, I didn't research it enough to see how legitimate this would be, but in some translations, it says that God said, if they ask you to go back with them, to go with them.
Right.
And then they sit, and then basically the answer is, well, he was mad because he didn't wait for them to ask him to go. He just went on his own accord. And that's what caused the anger, which may not be, but.
Yeah. And I saw that too. I read a lot of different translations. Some said if, some said since. And my guess is that in English, that's probably where some of the confusion comes from. Most of the commentators I read were on board with what I'm getting ready to say. And so I tend to think this is right. Cause I don't know. There's part of me, and I don't want to necessarily put this on translators because translators have a job to do, but there's part of me that thinks, okay, well, they were just trying to reconcile a difficulty here. And so they used the word if to kind of provide an out.
Yeah.
But the reality was the whole reason that they stayed the night was because they had already asked, right? Like for them, for him to come back. The whole point of their trip was for him to come back with them, right?
100%.
So I think since is probably the right interpretation and the meaning behind the word. Okay.
I agree with you.
So given that, what does that suggest? Well, that suggests that God knew something about Balaam's situation that we don't know, or that the text doesn't immediately reveal to us. And what he knew that the text does eventually reveal to us is that Balaam actually was not, it's everything that we were talking about. Balaam is actually not a servant of Yahweh. He is a servant of whatever gets him paid and whatever ultimately gets him paid the most money. Now, I think he still has a sort of respect for the deities, if you will, like we were talking about, right? He's doing this divination. He doesn't want to get on people's bad side. And yet, at the same time, he absolutely seems motivated by money. So I think the reason why Balaam gets stopped, which we're getting ready to talk about on the way back to Moab, is because God knows that his intentions are impure. And if you think about it, of course his intentions are impure. Again, this stuff becomes really obvious as you're thinking through it. But like the whole point is that he's on this trip to where the goal is to curse Israel's people. In fact, and we're not really going to get this far in the story for purposes of this podcast, but he eventually makes it back to Moab with King Balak. And they visit like four different locations where he speaks these prophetic oracles. So after the two times that he tried to get him to curse him with the messengers, Balak personally takes him from place to place to base. And in one place, he literally says, like, oh, well, maybe if we go over to this location over here, the God of the Hebrews or the Israelites will feel more inclined, basically, to curse them from this location. He literally is using that kind of language. I mean, it's desperate. And so regardless of anything else, you literally have Balaam on a tour here to bring a curse to the people. Now, God doesn't let him do that, but it's obvious that he wants the money or else he wouldn't be going around to all these different places and trying to actually get a curse placed on these people. So, and of course, we find out later on that actually, again, he did facilitate a curse being brought to the Israelites, and the New Testament affirms for us that Balaam was bad news, et cetera, et cetera. So God knew ahead of time that this guy who seems all good was bad news. He was able to judge the thoughts and motives and intents of his heart. And so again, there's a very practical lesson in that of sometimes we're looking at people and we're seeing the outside situation, but God knows what's going on the inside situation. And that's the situation that ultimately matters. And all sin will eventually be found out.
Yeah, 100%. And you're right. We kind of glean a little bit later. I think you're on the right track for sure that he wasn't doing this out of direct obedience to God. He was doing it because it got him paid. It got him in favor with whatever he felt like he needed to with the gods. And so,
Yeah,
and I think there could even be more to that, because you're right, it doesn't explicitly say, even though we can kind of gather later on with the donkey situation and elsewhere, there could even still be more that we just don't know, because it doesn't explicitly say in that verse, here's why God was mad.
Yeah, that's true. One point that I want to hit on real quick, and then we're gonna get to the rest of that first part of the story and finish out with the donkey thing eventually here. But, you know, again, one interesting thing about this whole situation, just to kind of go back to some of those divine counsel connections, is in Balaam's first oracle it was this prophetic utterance, right, that it was supposed to be a curse, but it was, again, another blessing from the mouth of the Lord. What it says about them is that Israel is not counted among the nations in his first oracle. And I think that's just a really interesting, there's a lot of actually cool like satire points that are made in the story, and most of the donkey is one, but there's some other ones as well, like the opening of the mouth and the opening of the eyes. These are all things that we probably won't get to very much, but there's all this theology in here that if you just don't have a context for, you're not going to see it. And just even a simple statement like Israel is not counted among the nations. I read that, and knowing what I know now, immediately obvious what this means. Oh, well, Balaam is this diviner. He's used to contacting, you know, the little g gods, right? He's used to being in contact with these entities. But this god, right, those other gods could probably be manipulated, right? Those other gods would probably feel fine placing a curse on their own people. They don't, in fact, Psalm 82, right? Why is God judging the little g gods? Well, he's doing so because they failed to care for his people, right? I mean, everybody is ultimately God's people, if you will, because they were created by him. And so he's actually punishing the little g gods for their failure to treat them how they should be treated. The little g gods are jealous, right? They are self, they want glory for themselves. They accept worship for themselves that belongs only to God. And so here Balaam is, this guy who's like a known diviner, and he's probably used to getting his way with these other entities or whatever, and making things happen in order to appease certain people, right? But not Yahweh. He can't do this with Yahweh. Yahweh only allows him to say, in fact, one of the only examples in scripture that I'm aware of where it essentially says, hey, this is like a trance download. Like it literally basically says that, that he's speaking through a trance. And so you have this thing where it's like, the opening, Balaam's eyes being opened and the opening of the eyes and all this, those are things that are said in there. But you literally have this God, Yahweh, the one true creator God, the God of the Hebrews, saying in this that Israel's not counted among the nations. In other words, you can't mess with these people because they're my chosen people, right? You can't mess with them. And so, Balaam may have his way with all the other gods, but he can't have his way with Yahweh. And just a powerful image there that gets brought out in this story that I just would have never even picked up on before. So
yeah, I don't have I wish we had time to delve into the whole story of it. Maybe we will at some point. We're kind of focusing on the strange stuff of it, but
it's a good story.
Reading a passage like this is one passage too where I never think about relating to the divine counsel and how it makes sense. Like this never pops up in my mind, but it in fact does. And reading it without that understanding kind of leaves you in the dark on Balaam's just relationship with the other gods. And if you read this without going into that with a knowledge, you kind of skim over that again, and you just kind of accept it as, oh, this guy practiced witchcraft, but it's not real. And it just falls apart. It doesn't make any sense.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, totally. And that's not good. For right,
no.
You know, for Bible interpretation, it's really not good if you just have like one, you know, all these random stories just floating out there. that don't have a coherence to them. And of course, you know, the Divine Council worldview is something that kind of brings us to that. And if you don't know what the Divine Council worldview is, many videos on this podcast and on this YouTube channel about it. So you can go check that out. Okay, let's move on. So Balaam and Balak's messengers, they are on their way back to Moab, and God is mad at them. And so what happens? Well, the angel of the Lord appears. Now, there's two things interesting about this. Okay. The first interesting thing about this is that we have to remember the angel of the Lord, because we have the benefit of hindsight and we think about him as, you know, the pre-incarnate Christ, or, you know, the pre-incarnate second person of the Trinity, or whatever. And we see him throughout the Old Testament, and we usually see him in the context of delivering Israel in some way. We always think about him as the good guy. But the angel of the Lord is also the bad guy, I mean, for the enemy, right? You know, the angel of the Lord is referred to as the destroyer, right? I mean, it is the angel of the Lord who took the life of the firstborn of all in Egypt, except those who were covered with the blood on the doorposts and such. So this guy, when he shows up, can be good news and bad news, depending on who you are. In Balaam's case, he is bad news. But here's the irony. So again, right, the angel of the Lord is the second person of the Trinity, right? Michael Heiser would call him Yahweh visible, right? And so here you have this guy showing up to oppose Balaam. And again, Balaam is this diviner, right? Balaam is this prophetic seer. Mm-hmm. It's his professional job.
He knows all.
He knows them all. Yeah. He can see them all. He can contact them. Here's the satire. Here's the fun part of the story. Balaam can't see him. Donkey can.
Yes.
Right? So they're moseying along, traveling along. Nobody sees anything, is aware of anything, but Balaam's donkey sees this creepy figure out there, the angel of the Lord with a sword or whatever, right? And the donkey freaks out, right? So if a donkey goes crazy, he beats the donkey. Same thing happens two more times, right? Beats the donkey. And then it says that the Lord opened the donkey's mouth, and the donkey's like, bruh, what the heck are you doing? You know, it's like, you've never done this before. All this, and Balaam's like, buddy, you better be glad, because you're lucky I don't kill you right now, kind of thing, right? Mm. And then suddenly, the angel of the Lord opens the eyes of Balaam, and he can see the angel of the Lord. And the angel of the Lord says the same thing to Balaam that Balaam said to the donkey. The angel of the Lord's like, look, if it wasn't for that donkey right there, right? Who saved you from harm here, I was about to kill you, right? And yes. and so he has this humbling moment. He bows down, right? Not, again, we shouldn't think that he's like, now, like, you know, this is repentance, right? He got saved on the way to Moab. That is not what happened to Balaam, okay? All right, Balaam is experiencing, in my opinion, he's experiencing guilt for doing a wrong thing. He immediately says, you know, forgive me, I have sinned. And then here, right? So remember, just a minute ago, God was mad because he was going to the place because he had ill intent, right? This whole thing with the donkey happened. The Lord opens the mouth of the donkey. The donkey and him have this conversation. Isn't it funny how normal Balaam like just responds to the donkey like it's nothing? Yeah. You know, one commentator I read said, well, since he was used to doing the divining thing and whatnot, and you look at ancient Near Eastern cultures and how they worshiped and everything, he's like, actually, it's quite reasonable that Balaam actually probably had encountered talking animals before, you know, in some way.
That's what I kind of thought. Either he had experienced that before, or he was just so enraptured in that world that when it did happen, it didn't just come as a surprise as what it would have normally to someone else.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And to kind of preframe a little bit about, we're getting ready to record another podcast episode on the literal versus literary. I don't know. Who knows? Did that thing literally happen, Or was the interaction between him and the donkey a literary device that was placed there for a certain purpose? I don't know. I'm inclined to think that it just happened exactly like it said. I particularly think this is an example of where the literary meaning flows out of the literal event that happened, which is often the case. But who cares? I could be wrong about that one day and it would be totally fine. I'm absolutely fine if God wanted to insert sort of this literary moment that happened for the sake. And you might say, well, why? Because let's go here for just a second. Why would God do that? Right? Why would God inspire the Bible to say this event happened, but then it didn't really happen? Well, I want to say that even the way that I have framed that example question, I intentionally framed it in a way that a very modern person interested in very didactic history would ask that question. The reality is that for them reading this story, I would be fine with the literal retelling of the story, not actually having the whole little interaction with the donkey there back and forth, and that being inserted to make the meaning stronger of what happens when the angel of the Lord confronts him. It's like, you just got mad at your donkey, right? Yeah. For all this or whatever. But then like, you just committed the same problem that he's like, I was about to kill you too. Because your intents are bad. Right. And so there was it's this moment of reflection that happens to Balaam where essentially he's punishing the donkey for doing the same thing that he was just doing, in disobeying the Lord because of the intents of his heart. So I'm all right with it if it didn't actually happen and this is just a literary thing that is supposed to make the reader go, oh yeah, boy, you're a real, I'm going to say this because it'll be a Bible joke. Boy, you're a real ass. Okay. Let's all laugh. Okay. All right. Cause donkey. Okay. So you get it, right?
I got it.
You get it. So, I'm okay with that if that's what it is, but I'm not necessarily sure, that that's what it is. But again, the point regardless is the donkey has more ability to see, right, the danger in the road than this professional seer did. And then, of course, that happens. The angel of the Lord says, all right, he reiterates what God said. Yeah, you can go, but you can only say what I tell you to say. And again, he seems to have obeyed that. It doesn't really look like God gave him much choice. I think it's only four. I think there's four oracles to follow. And in all of those four oracles, essentially, all Balaam can do is continue to repeat blessings on Israel, even though Balak repeatedly is asking for cursings. And that's the story, man.
Which that's kind of funny in and of itself. He's paid this guy to come to get him a curse on his enemy or who he thinks will be his enemy. But all he does is do blessings. Talk about like the worst hire in the world.
Right, right. Well, he's even like, Balak finally gives up after four tries. And he's like, fine, I'm not going to pay you. And Balaam is like, well, I told your people before I came that I can only say what the Lord says. So it's not really my fault.
It is funny with these stories. And you and I definitely need to do a series on Jonah. But like Jonah and the whale, the talking donkey, all these situations, it's never the focus of the passage.
That's right.
Like if I'm writing my fantasy book and there's like a talking tiger or something, that's probably going to be a really big part of my story. Well, why does the tiger talk? You know, what's the backstory for that? What's the story arc for it? But in all these other stories in the Bible, it's just a side piece to the actual point that's being told.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. And I'm going to save it because we're getting a little bit long on this episode, but there is an episode that we have coming up where we're going to talk about another interaction with Jesus and nature. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit because I want to make a point about that I think is going to be kind of interesting, how you see some of these fanatical things happening, donkeys talking and whales swallowing people and all this, where I think there's this sort of a secondary meaning, but I'm going to make you wait a couple weeks before I tell you what I think that is. So just stay tuned for that.
Awesome. Sounds good. You'll have to wait a couple weeks, but I'll wait a couple hours. How's that sound?
That sounds good. Yep. I'll spill the beans. So, all right.
All right, Steve. Well, hey, this was a great, really fun episode. Glad we tackled this and always looking forward to more in the future.
Absolutely. I hope it was helpful for you and you learned a little bit. And like it, share it with your friends. Leave us a review if you really love this podcast on audio. Yeah. That'd be really helpful. And we'll see you in the next one.
See you next time.